welcome to a Juno afternoon on Monday, February 22nd, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get the details about this Wednesday's League of Women Voters mayoral candidate forum, live from the Assembly Chambers. Andy Engstrom and Bill Dantzel will be here to highlight Tuesday's Free Flight Film Festival at the Gold Town Theater. We'll talk with Linda Boyle about the Monday night VA listening session, and Laura Anderson from the Treadwell Ice Arena, and Sue Baxter and Chris Myrtle will be here to highlight upcoming events on the ice. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 41 in Hoonah, 43 in Gustavus.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders in northern Arizona continue to press for the creation of the Greater Grand Canyon Heritage National Monument. A recent survey shows statewide support for the proposal that would set aside nearly 2 million acres outside Grand Canyon National Park. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The survey was conducted in January among more than 700 Arizonans who will likely vote in November's presidential election. The poll, commissioned by the Grand Canyon Trust, shows 80% of the respondents either strongly support or somewhat support the possible monument designation. About 14% oppose it. It's the second recent survey to show a majority of Arizonans favor the proposal. Supporters say the designation would protect animal habitat and old-growth forest. They also say it would safeguard the Grand Canyon's watershed and tribal sacred sites against uranium mining. Herman Honani is the chairman of the Hopi tribe.
The Grand Canyon is a place of birth to the Hopi tribe, to the Hopi people, to the clans, and our emergence is situated at the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
The Arizona Game and Fish Department and some state officials and members of Congress, however, oppose the plan. They say a national monument would complicate wildlife management and have a negative impact on hunting and recreation. President Obama hasn't indicated whether he'll use his executive power to designate the monument. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The public university system in Arizona has approved a new tribal consultation policy. As Carrie Young reports, the regulations govern how state schools interact with tribal nations on issues such as research and land use.
The new policy was created to replace the three separate policies that the University of Arizona, Arizona State University, and Northern Arizona University had been operating under since 2011. It also provides the state's 22 tribal nations with a procedure for addressing concerns over university research. Luann Leonard is a member of the Arizona Board of Regents, the university system's governing body.
We just want to make sure that as we move forward that our relationships with our tribes are positive and that we respect their sovereign status, their tribal customs, their laws, all of that.
Leonard says the goal is to reduce the confusion that having three separate policies was creating. The board also hopes to prevent situations like the one faced by the Havasupai tribe in the 1990s over misused DNA samples. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
Montana educators are focusing on Indian education this week at a best practices conference in Billings. According to the Montana Office of Public Instruction, this year marks the 10th year that the Indian Education for All law has been fully implemented in public schools. Native American culture and history are being taught at school, and work is being done to close the achievement gap for American Indian students. In a video message to educators, Superintendent of Public Instruction Denise Juno says, students are connecting to their school communities because of the work, which has included efforts to dispel stereotypes.
American Indian students can now see themselves and where they've come from in textbooks, artwork, and daily lessons. Because of the work you've done, students are learning about the history and culture of their neighbors in a way that has never been presented to them before. This work to make sure all students feel connected to their school community is the reason I can proudly say more Montana students are graduating from high school than ever before. Fewer students are dropping out than ever before, and in just 7 short years, the American Indian dropout rate has been cut by nearly a third.
Juno goes on to say that states across the country are looking at Montana as an example of how to narrow the student achievement gap. More than 200 educators are participating in the conference, which ends on Tuesday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Support by the 2016 Forum on Dropout Prevention for Native and Tribal Communities, March 6th to 9th. 400 educators and youth practitioners from over 30 states sharing best practices on dropout prevention. Info on registration at dropoutprevention.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 22nd, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by George Brown. He's here to tell us about Wednesday's League of Women Voters mayoral candidate forum. Welcome to the show, George.
Thank you, Scott. So this Wednesday, that's 2 days from now, at 6:30, we will start at the Assembly Chambers, and from 6:30 to 7, we'll have a meet and greet, we'll have coffee and some refreshments. And from 7 to 8, then we will have our traditional League of Women Voters candidate forum. And this, at this time, it will feature Karen Crane, who was an assembly member, and Ken Kelch, who has been an assembly member in the past and is well known in the community as a high school government teacher. They are the two who are running. One of our board members, Allison Curry, will act as the moderator. And this is a collaborative effort by KTOO and the Juno Empire. You know, you competing news people, you're cooperating. So collaboration is something the League likes to do. And so Elizabeth Jenkins of K2 will ask questions, and Sam DeGrave of the Empire will ask questions. Now, there's an added feature this year. The students from Thunder Mountain High School government class actually met with both these candidates last Friday. It was in their classroom last Tuesday and Wednesday and was talking about why we are having another election. And these students, when they met with these two candidates, have come up with a bio sketch about their past. And they prepared this. And when you come to the forum on Wednesday night, we will hand these out. Two of the students will just very briefly say something about their process. But those students asked me some very difficult questions. Now, the League has been doing these forums for a long time, and those of us who have been around for a while know that last October we did this in the same place in the Assembly. Then we had, I think, three school board candidates and two or three Assembly candidates. This time there are only two. But the process of getting those students to know about what's going on and to ask questions was very productive. They've come up with 26 questions that they have submitted. And then we canvassed all of our League members in Juno. That's a little over 100 people. And we came up with just serendipitously exactly the same number of questions. So they will be picked from the audience. I mean, those questions will be picked ahead of time, but there will also be questions from the audience, and the students will help pick up the questions. Now, these questions are not, you know, simple, you know, why do you want to be mayor? They really get down to the nitty-gritty about what the students see about what they want in school and what people are worried about. And the reason we're having this election, we all know, is because of the tragedy of electing a new mayor last October. And some people have asked, well, why we need an election? And I don't think there's a simple answer, but I've been talking to people, and it's pretty clear to me that there was a lot of enthusiasm in October to have new leadership, and that was taken away. And I think we're still looking for new leadership. So both candidates are fully qualified, and it's a great opportunity for, you know.
Okay. George, you've been on the board for several years. You've been a member of the League of Women Voters for a long time. Why are you so passionate about voting? Why is it important to you and the group?
The basic answer for me personally is because I know that democracy is a work in progress. Our country is not a true functioning democracy, but it can be, and it has been in the past. And I take great, faith in that we can do this again. And what the League is about is getting people to know that their vote really counts. People ask me, you know, why vote? And when they say that, what I'm very aware of is they're sensing it doesn't count. And what that really means at a very basic human level is they have given up on their influence and power as a human being, because everybody is equal ultimately, and everybody has that energy, and what they think and what they have to say adds to what's important, and that's what voting is all about. Now, the voter turnout has been very low all over the country, and it's been somewhat better in Alaska. It was better in 2014 because of the marijuana proposition, but we need to improve it. And all I want to say is I know existentially that your vote counts, and so do you.
George, what does the League of Women Voters look like here in Juneau? About how many members do you have?
We stay right around 100. There are, I don't know, maybe a dozen or so men. There have been three men on our board, and probably after World War II is when men became more involved. The whole history of the League is that when they, after 70 or 80 years of trying, they finally got the right to vote. Women did. They knew how important it was, and they wanted to make sure other people would do it. And we keep doing this.
Okay. To see their work in action firsthand, you can go to the CBJ Assembly Chambers this Wednesday night, right?
That's right.
And tell us again, 6:30 is a meet and greet?
Yeah, we start at 6:30. We'll have coffee and some refreshments. And then right at 7, our League president, Gina Del Rosio, will just welcome everybody, and then we'll go right into the forum. And you can ask questions there if you want to, and we will get them and present them to the candidates.
And if you can't make it to the chambers this Wednesday evening, you can also listen on K2 right here.
Yep, it'll start at 7 o'clock live.
Okay. George Brown is on the board of directors of the League of Women Voters, and he'll be there, I'm sure, this Wednesday for the mayoral candidate forum from 6:30 to 8 downtown in the chambers, the assembly chambers. George, anything else you want to add?
Just thank you for K2 and what you do for what public radio does for democracy.
Well, thank you, George.
So long now, I've been out in the rain and snow, but we
listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, February 26, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, is about 15 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Bill Dansel. He's a member of the Eagles Paragliding Club, and among other things, we're going to be talking about Tuesday's Free Flight Film Festival. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you so much, Scott. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. It's nice to have you. So, Eagles Paragliding Club.
Yeah, the Juno's Eagle Paragliding Club. We the club actually started quite a few years ago. Maybe I'd say it's maybe over 15 years old by now. But it started with just a small group of guys at first going off the mountain, and it wasn't a very organized thing at first, and then gradually we started to get a few more members in the area, and it got a little bit more organized, and we got ourselves under the USPA, or the United States Hang Gliding and Paragliding Association. It's an association across the country that sort of promotes what they call non-powered free flight throughout the country. And it's mainly foot launch or hang gliding and paragliding. And for Juno, I'm pretty new to the club. I've been in the club for about 6 years or so. And it's been a wonderful experience. We're hosting Juno's first ever free flight film festival. It'll be at the Old Town Nickelodeon, like you're saying. It'll be tomorrow, Tuesday, February 23rd at 6. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. And then we'll start the movies at 7. And it's the festival hosts it's five films sort of displaying the best of hang gliding and paragliding across the country. And it shows different perspectives of the sport. So for those of you who have never tried it, it's a wonderful thing to experience.
And so are you the guys we see jumping off the top of Mount Roberts?
Yes, that is us. We are the Mount Roberts guys. And sometimes we go off Eagle Crest and different areas around Juno. Mount Roberts is the main one because we get sort of a ride up a mountain with the tram, and then we hike the rest of the way.
And are you a hang glider or a paraglider, and what's the difference?
Okay, no, we do paragliding here. I think years ago they tried hang gliding. The difference is with hang gliding, it's a rigid frame contraption that you take off. It looks more like a large triangle, but the paragliding is more of a parachute type of equipment. It's very light. It's about maybe 13 pounds, and you take off from the ground. You don't have to jump out of airplanes. You really don't have to jump off of a mountain. You could actually start on a smaller slope, but you have a nice gentle wind going. You put the glider on the ground, and you move it a certain way, and it'll lift above you, and you can take off from there.
Do you remember the first time you did it?
I sure do. The first time was in Santa Barbara, California, facing the ocean, nice light breeze, and the instructor hooked everything to me and said, okay, here's what you do, here's how you face it, here's how you bring it up. And I brought the glider up into the wind, and it was the most wonderful thing because it's also very aesthetically beautiful. The kite was very colorful and against the sky, and I turned into the wind and started just a few steps along. You start to feel light. The glider is actually pulling you up, coaxing you upward, and you continue to run, and then before you know it, you're airborne.
Wow, what's the highest altitude you think you've ever gotten to, give or take?
My highest altitude was off of Chelan Butte in Chelan, Washington. It's about 4,000 feet.
So. Wow, how do you feel when you're just looking down at 4,000 feet between your feet just dangling?
That took a little getting used to. But you feel very comfortable because you can feel from the ground that the glider has you. So you never feel like you have to fall, like parachuting out of a plane. You have to jump and fall first. And yeah, so this sensation is from the ground up. You can feel that you're cradled and you just enjoy the flight and steer where you want to go and catch the up. What we catch to maintain sustained flight, we catch thermals, the warm air coming off the ground that you see the eagles circling in. We try to center that and sustain our flight.
I imagine you all must study things like wind and the weather.
Yes, we do.
Weather.
We have extensive weather training you have first, and then you start to learn a little bit more about aerodynamics, how wings work. Generally, they start with aircraft wings, rigid wings, and then they go from there. Because the paraglider, when it's open in the wind, it sort of makes that shape of an airplane wing, so it's very efficient. And the gliders nowadays can sustain flight for several hours. It's a funny history to the earlier part of the sport. It started with alpine actually, there's a varied history, but the main part, it started with alpine hikers years ago. They would hike up for hours in these beautiful vistas, and then would have to hike back down. Well, they started taking parachute sails and sort of running off and kind of gliding down. Those sails were very inefficient, so they didn't stay. But it was just enough to get them to glide off and get back. And the sport grew from there. People did it more and more. The gliders became more and more efficient, and now you could have sustained flight for hours.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I don't know, do you consider this an extreme sport? I guess my question is, on a scale of 1 to 10, I've seen some of these, like, you know, bat suits jumping off of the stuff.
You know,
I think of that as like a 10 on the danger scale. Where would you say paragliding
I would agree with you. I would agree that the bat suit would be a 10. With paragliding, I would say it's probably about a, maybe about a 6, okay. You know, actually, because the safety of the sport, it's come such a long way that the gliders nowadays, that once you get in flight, at least the beginning gliders are designed to reopen themselves if you should have a collapse, or and they fly very slow. It's very, you foot launch very slowly, you land very slowly, so everything's very safe, and you're under a parachute, so it's then getting any safer than that than when you're in the air.
And you mentioned a class that you took in Santa Barbara. We have those here, and how long does it take?
You know, we don't have training here in Juneau, but we do have here in this training pretty much in all the other states. I got my training in Santa Barbara, and it comprises about maybe a week of flying, and you do your ground school first, which is weather and aerodynamics, and then they introduce you to the equipment itself. And then you're actually flying the very first day. They have very small hills, like little training hills, for you, and you can just run off and you go straight, no turning or catching thermals involved. You just glide straight down. And from there, you do several of those kinds of flights until you can get more proficient at turning. And the instructor's with you in the radio. You have a radio and you set in your helmet, and he's talking to you the whole way, how to turn, when to pull the cords. And after a while, it becomes, it's very intuitive. After a while, it becomes, you become very comfortable with it.
All right. Sounds like fun. So you said 5 movies?
5 movies, yes. The festival itself is about maybe an hour in length, and it consists of 5 movies. The first one is titled Dreaming Awake, and that's a perspective of, it explores the coastal Big Sur area in California. They have they take the shots of their helicopter camera shots and some GoPro shots, but they're professionally done, and it shows a very good vista of the California coastline. Someone's doing that. The next one is called Keen to Learn, and that's a glimpse of paragliding in Nepal, India. Actually, there's a foundation there. In addition to USHPA, there's another foundation called Cloud Base Foundation. They do paragliding promotion in Nepal, India, to help the children there to raise money for school children there in their part of the country, their part of the world. And then the next film is called A Higher Point of View, and that one's sort of a quick compilation of paragliding around the world, different perspectives, people soaring, ridge soaring, and thermal soaring. Another beautiful vista. All of it is actually very beautiful shots, done very well. And then we have another one called 500 Miles to Nowhere. And this one's interesting. This one's an award-winning documentary film, and it offers a glimpse into what we call Vol-Biv flying. It's people who paraglide mountain and camp on mountain ranges. So you sort of paraglide and camp at the same time. You start off at a hill, you take off, fly for a while, land at the top of a mountain, camp overnight. And the next morning, you take off to another, and you do that all throughout the mountain range. So that's a pretty good documentary there. That's a newer addition to the sport. And then we have also the last one's called Live the Dream, and this one follows a woman's personal story where she's getting involved with the sport of hang gliding, which is sort of like paragliding, still a foot launch, non-powered thing, but she's actually going from start to finish. So you'll see her take the classes and start in the beginning hill and gradually work her way up to where she's off the mountains.
Okay, so this starts at 6:30 tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, 6:30 tomorrow night
at Old Town Nick.
Old Town Nickelodeon, and the doors open at 6:30, and we'll start the movies at 7 p.m. And the event is free, so we have suggested donations for the local trail mix and the Raptor Center there up at the tram.
Last question for you. You said you are a longtime air traffic controller, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, very much so. 20 years now.
Wow.
Here in Juneau.
How does your work as an air traffic controller sort of meet with you as a paraglider?
It's a perfect mesh because with my option of the controller, there's three options mainly. There's en route center, tower, and flight service. I'm in the flight service option. We deal with weather extensively. We brief pilots on weather and brief pilots on how the systems move. So that works hand in hand with my paraglider.
Bet that keeps
endeavors.
You busy here in Juneau.
It sure does.
All right. Well, Bill Dansel, thanks for coming in. He's part of the Eagles Paragliding Club. They will be having their free flight film festival tomorrow night, Tuesday, at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. Bill, thank you for coming in. Anything
else
you want to add?
No, I think just thank you so much for having us and giving us a chance to promote this free flight film festival. And it's been wonderful, wonderful experience here in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. The climate of the Earth is changing rapidly. As we burn fossil fuels at a rate faster than nature can remove the emissions from the atmosphere, birds are responding accordingly. Of the 305 species found in North America in winter, nearly 60% have shifted their ranges northward by an average of 35 miles. Many birds are migrating earlier and laying their eggs earlier in the spring. Not all bird species will be able to adapt, but birds have survived past dramatic changes in climate, and there are ways we can help them. As some places become unsuitable for the birds now living there, new areas will become available. We can anticipate these places and begin to improve them. For example, the rare Kirtland's warbler breeds only in young jack pines in Michigan and Wisconsin. By regularly burning the stands of pine and by controlling parasitic brown-headed cowbirds, managers have increased the population from fewer than 200 pairs to more than 2,000 pairs today. But to help the warblers in the future, biologists now plan to introduce them into other suitable habitat in northern Michigan and Ontario. New stands of young pines there may be optimal places for the warblers as the climate warms. There's more about bird conservation in the face of climate change at our website, birdnote.org.
Hi, this is George Kuhar. Join me and Playboy Spaceman Friday, February 26th at 7 p.m. for a live taping at Studio 360. We'll be playing new material from our upcoming release, debuting new and original video projections, and jamming out with a pink gorilla. Come and see for yourself. Tickets at PlayboySpaceman.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 22nd of February, 2016. It's the birthday of the first president of the United States, George Washington, born in Westmoreland County, Virginia, in 1732, whose favorite foods were mashed sweet potatoes with coconut string beans, with mushrooms, cream of peanut soup, salt cod, and pineapples. He also liked Brazilian nuts, and he cracked them between his jaws, which was the reason he lost all of his teeth except for one, and had to get dentures made out of a hippopotamus tusk. It was a painful thing to have in his mouth, and he used opium to alleviate the pain. George Washington, who was not very good at spelling and had a speech impediment, and whose inaugural address was the shortest in history, 133 words long, and even with false teeth, it took him just 90 seconds to deliver it. It's the birthday of the poet Gerald Stern, born in Pittsburgh in 1925, the birthday of the poet Edna St. Vincent Millay, born Rockland, Maine, 1892. She had two sisters. Her parents divorced when the girls were small. Her mother moved her daughters from town to town. They lived in poverty, but they had volumes of poetry, and the mother read them to her children. The girl entered a poetry contest. She won fourth place with a poem that would turn out to be one of her most famous, Renaissance. She was disappointed, but she read the poem aloud, and it impressed a wealthy woman named Caroline Dow, who offered to pay for Millay's education at Vassar. Millay went there at the age of 20. She was a slight woman with flaming red hair, a big personality. Graduated from Vassar, went to Greenwich Village to live the bohemian life, lived in an attic apartment at 75 and one-half Bedford Street, 9 feet long, 6 feet wide. For a time, Edna St. Vincent Millay was the most famous poet in America. And it was on this date in 1878 Frank Woolworth opened the first of his 5-cent stores, which later became a dime store, in Utica, New York. The innovation was that shoppers could look at the merchandise, did not have to ask a clerk to bring it to them. Here's a poem for today by Gerald Stern entitled Waving Goodbye. I wanted to know what it was like before we had voices and before we had bare fingers and before we had minds to move us through our actions and tears to help us over our feelings. So I drove my daughter through the snow to meet her friend and filled her car with suitcases and hugged her as an animal would, pressing my forehead against her, walking in circles, moaning, touching her cheek, and turned my head after them as an animal would, watching helplessly as they drove over the ruts, her smiling face and her small hand just visible over the giant pillows and coat hangers as they made their turn into the empty highway. A poem of Gerald Stern, Waving Goodbye, from This Time, published by Norton and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Writer's Almanac supported by Staples, offering tech services for small businesses like PC setup and repair, some tasks completed by the next day. Staples.com/tech services. Staples, make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 22nd, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 33 minutes after the hour. We have a little extra time on the show today. And this Friday night, Playboy Spaceman is going to be playing downstairs at 360. It is going to be an exciting show. We're looking forward to it. It starts at 7. Doors open at 6:30. Tickets are at playboyspaceman.com. But in getting ready for that show, Katie Bosler reminded us of a great old concert that we have from the Gold Town Nickelodeon, recorded in February of 2012. Bridget Cross at the time and George Kuhar recorded this. And here, just to get us in the mood for Friday night, here's Tokyo.
This station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juneau.org/parkrec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, February 22nd, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, and it's about 22 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Dr. Cynthia Joe, Cynthia Massey, and Linda Boyle. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. Why don't we start with you, Linda? We're going to be talking about tonight's VA listening session. Can you give us an outline of what it's going to look
sure.
like?
Oh, sure. It's going to be from 5 to 6:30 this evening, and the purpose of it is actually to listen to the veterans concerning their concerns and issues. I'm the interim director of the Alaska VA, veteran myself, so it's extremely important to hear what my fellow veterans have to say.
Okay, and this will be at the Elizabeth Peratrovich Hall from 5 to 6:30. Cynthia Massey, how do you fit into this equation?
I'm the choice champion and manager of Integrated Care Services, which is the purchasing care arm for the Alaska VA. I'll be there to answer any choice questions and to be able to help veterans navigate the system and to give an update on all the new enhancements that we have for the choice program.
Okay, and Dr. Cynthia Joe?
Oh, I'm here as the chief of staff, and so I'm here for the clinical issues that may come up, questions from patients during the town hall meeting tonight.
Okay, and how many, you've been doing this for a while. How many years would you say?
In various positions. I've been with the Alaska VA since I retired off active duty in 2001. I've been the chief nurse.
Okay.
And since August, I've been the interim director.
I suspect it's sort of obvious, Linda, but who is going to benefit most from tonight's listening session?
I would hope that both of us would, actually, because I need to hear what they have to say on the issues that we need to look at and work on, and they need to hear from us.
Okay. What in the veterans community these days, what are some of the biggest challenges that people are facing? This goes to anybody.
I believe one of the biggest challenges right now is the reason why we have Cindy Massey with us as our choice champion is certainly last June with the start of the choice program here in Alaska, there were some bumps and some areas that needed improvement that we've continued to work on since that time and some new changes that have occurred recently based upon what we've heard from our veterans and also from our senators.
And Cynthia, what does choice stand for again? Please remind us.
This is the Accountability Act that was to help access, you know, for our veterans. So that is giving the veterans, and they have an 866 number that they can call in, or if they have to wait at the VA over 30 days, they're given the opportunity to find a choice provider in the community to take care of their health care needs.
Okay. How about you, Dr. Joe, Cynthia Joe? What are some of the challenges that you see veterans facing these days?
So I think there's some confusion about the program because previously the Alaska VA purchased care directly from vendors in the community, and then the Choice Act was passed in August of 2014 in which the VA had contracted nationally for the VA to purchase care. And so we were transitioning from our program into going with the Tri-West contractor who was then purchasing care on our behalf. And so there's been some confusion with that over time, and we've been working with Tri-West and our community partners to educate them and to educate the patients on how to access care. That is our concern, that patients are able to get the care that they need.
Okay. Linda, can you tell us again what folks can expect from tonight's session?
I think possibly tonight what I'll basically do is introduce myself again to those. I'm hoping that more veterans show than did last time. The more, the merrier, I suppose, because then you get to hear more of what the issues might be. I will certainly look at addressing choice up front with individuals as far as what we've done and not done, what we're looking at hopefully going to in the future, and then looking to see what we can perhaps help them with this evening. We will also have VBA available by phone, you know, because it's very difficult.
VBA?
VBA is the Benefits Administration. As a veteran, you don't think about VA health and VA benefits. You think of VA as one. So we routinely will have VBA with us or by phone with us to answer those questions that veterans might have concerning their benefits.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. Do we have a veterans hospital in Anchorage?
We have a joint venture facility that's with the DOD.
And DOD stands for?
Department of Defense.
Okay.
It's the Air Force facility in Anchorage. We're connected by a link to them. So they're our emergency room of choice. We have an ICU that we share with them. Whoever goes into the ICU, whether it be DOD or VA, it doesn't matter. There's a 10-bed ICU there. And we also have some multi-service beds there, too.
And do you have a small facility here in Juneau as well? Or
we have a CBOC here, a community outreach center here. Has one physician. We're looking at hiring a part-time A&P. We have an RN, a couple of LPNs. We draw bloods. We have a social worker on board.
Okay.
Try to take care of people's primary care needs.
And then if they have bigger issues, maybe they go to Anchorage.
They go to Anchorage or else we'd feed out in the community.
Okay. Well, listening session tonight from 5 to 6:30. What else would you like to share about the session, anyone? Did we cover it?
I think just basically we're looking to hope to see people there.
Okay, and I'm sure it's free.
Right? Absolutely.
5 to 6:30.
Even with cookies.
And free cookies. Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall. If somebody wanted more information, is there a website or Facebook page or something they should know about, or should they just show up at 5?
Yes, this is Sam Huston, the Public Affairs Officer. We have a website, www.alaska.va.gov. You can find all our veteran listening sessions on our agenda as well as our Facebook page, which is Alaska VA Healthcare System.
All right. Well, thank you all for coming in to the show today. And, again, the listening session for the VA listening session is at the Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall from 5 to 6:30. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, Scott.
Support comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, kicking off the annual Rainforest Old Timers Hockey Tournament February 6th through the 28th. This tournament brings in more than 100 adult skaters and their families from all over Alaska and the Yukon, including teams from Whitehorse, Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Petersburg, and Homer. Can't wait until the 26th? Stop in and watch a friendly sister game on Thursday, February 25th from 8 until 9 p.m. with Whitehorse versus Juneau. These games are open to the public and will have light concessions available. For more information, call Treadwell Ice Arena at 586-0410.
Morning. When this life is over, I'll fly away to that home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory. I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away. Just a few more weary days and then I'll fly away. To that land where joy will never end, I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away. Oh, I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away in the morning. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away.
Support comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, kicking off the annual Rainforest Old Timers Hockey Tournament February 6th through the 28th. This tournament brings in more than 100 adult skaters and their families from all over Alaska and the Yukon, including teams from Whitehorse, Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Petersburg, and Homer. Can't wait until the 26th? Stop in and watch a friendly sister game on Thursday, February 25th from 8 until 9 p.m. with Whitehorse versus Juneau. These games are open to the public and will have light concessions available. For more information, call Treadwell Ice Arena at 586-0410.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, February 22nd. Scott Burden, your host, is about 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Lauren Anderson. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thanks for having us.
Of the Treadwell Ice Arena. And Chris Myrtle.
Hello.
He is a tournament organizer. We're about to learn about that tournament. And Sue Baxter, coordinator of the Juneau Sister Cities Committee Alliance.
Well, it's a committee, and I'm co-chair of that committee. It's an advisory committee to the city.
All right. Should we start with this tournament? It sounds pretty exciting.
Sure. This is the 13th annual Rainforest Classic Old Timers Tournament. It's for hockey players 35 years of age and older. We have 8 teams this year, 5 from out of town and 3 that are local. And it starts this Friday afternoon and goes on till noontime on Sunday with the championship games on Sunday morning.
13th annual. It must be working well.
13 years, ever since the rink has opened. So I guess we're the first tournament at the Treadwell, and we continue to roll on there.
Okay. Sue Baxter, Sister Cities with Whitehorse. Tell us about that relationship.
Well, the Sister Cities relationship, you know, I really don't know how old it is. I know it's at least 20 years old. Whitehorse was one of our first sister cities, and maybe the first. And about 4 years ago, a team from Whitehorse came down. There was a game. Whitehorse won, and they took the trophy back to Whitehorse. Now they are bringing it back, and we will have a rematch, which is the first game, actually, of the tournament that is Thursday evening at 8 o'clock.
Okay, that's this Thursday. The whole thing kicks off.
That's correct.
And, Chris, you were saying it goes through when?
It goes, well, the first game is the Sister City game, which is Thursday at 8. Then the rest of the tournament kicks off Friday, starting at 5:15, goes till a little after 11. Starts again Saturday morning at 9:15, goes till about 6. And then our championship games are Sunday morning at 9 o'clock and 10:30.
So is that first game then, Sue, is that like an all-star game?
It is,
Chris?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a hybrid. We try to make it fair. We could crush White Horse at will if we wanted to. Not that I'm throwing the gauntlet down to my friends up north. No, the team they're bringing this year, their average age is 50. So what we did is we tried to be an accommodating host. So we're rejigging our best team, which is the Juno Aces, and we're creating a hybrid. We're making them a little bit older so that we're skating a comparable team in terms of age. Because old-timers, a really important thing is age plays a lot of consideration. If there's ever a tie, it goes to the oldest team, and that's how the Sister City was won a couple of years ago when the cup went back to White Horse, because it was a tie game, but White Horse was older, so they got the cup.
So it sounds like there's a little bit of rivalry, but I imagine this is just a really fun tournament.
It is very fun. It's a lot more lighthearted. It is a really fun, friendly game to come out and watch. So there'll be definitely some good competition. If you want to see old-time hockey, that'll be the Sunday morning championship games. But the Thursday morning is the kickoff game. It's a little more lighthearted, a lot of fun. But people will be playing, of course, for their city. So it'll be good hockey.
Okay.
The mayor will be coming. The Juno mayor will be there to do the puck drop to start us out. And we will have singing of the Canadian National Anthem and the American National Anthem. There'll also be cookies, stars, and maple leaves for sale. And
the bookie will be there, depending on whether you buy the maple leaves or the stars. No, I'm kidding. But it is a free event, so I think that's worthwhile. Is the whole tournament and the Sister City game is a free tournament. So great opportunity for the community to come down. Even if you've never watched hockey live, come on down. It's a lot of fun. You'll see some wily old veterans that know how to make a really good pass and a really good play. They may be a little slower, but they've got the skills.
One wonderful thing is that the Prospector Hotel has paid for the ice time for the Sister Cities game. So we're very grateful for them for picking that up.
That's great. Do you want to fill us in, Lauren, about what else is going on at the ice arena?
Sure. We have a busy weekend ahead with our Sister City game and our Rainforest Classic tournament. But after the tournament on Sunday is an open skate, and we're partnering up with the Girl Scouts like we have for the last 3 years, and Sue Perlis will be in town, and she's a speed skater. She's the CEO of the Girl Scouts of Alaska, and this is an open skate that we offer with a speed skating twist, so we encourage you to come out. It's a whole different style of skating, and if you would like to come, admission is our regular admission, which is $6 for an adult, $5 for a youth. But if you have a donation of toiletries, which would be going to the glory hole, your skates would be free, your skate rental. So we encourage you to come on out to the rink. It's from 12:15 to 1:15, so you can start your morning off with a little hockey and see the championship games, and then stick around for an open skate with Sue and some speed skating.
Okay. Chris, you want to outline for us once more just sort of the schedule?
Sure. So the Sister City game is White Horse versus Juno. That's Thursday at 8 o'clock. The rest of the tournament really kicks off Friday night starting at 5:15, goes till about 11:15, resumes Saturday morning at 9:15, and goes till a little before 6. And then the championship games, which is people really play their heart out for, Saturday morning at 9, and then 10:30 is the championship. We'll have teams from Whitehorse, Anchorage. Fairbanks is finally coming back again. They played with us for quite a few years, took a couple years off, and they're back. We have teams from Homer, Petersburg, and then we have players from all over the United States. People pick up a player from Seattle, Washington, D.C., and they'll just kind of jump in. And, you know, I just want to give props to Lauren and Treadwell and Parks and Recreation. I hear this every time. we have our tournament. They just love the Treadwell. It's a clean facility. It's modern. It's just a great, great arena to play in. So we get a lot of compliments. And that's why we get these players coming down. We'll have about 100 players coming in from out of town coming to this. They bring their spouses, friends and families. Whitehorse charters an airplane, brings a whole crew of people down to cheer on their team. So it's a lot of fun. It's a really great community event.
Sounds like it. It sounds to me, too, if you can't go to the whole thing, maybe go to the opening game on Thursday and the championship games on Saturday morning?
Sunday morning. Sunday morning at 9 and 10:30. Yep.
All right. Sue, anything else you'd like to add?
We are really happy to sponsor this with our sister city. We have 5 other sister cities, and the Sister Cities Committee works really hard to make as many of these type of exchanges as we can to what? Possible.
Not to put you on the spot, what are our other 5 sister cities?
We have Calibo, which is our newest one, in Aklan, Philippines, Vladivostok in Russia, Mishan City in China, and Chai in Taiwan. We also have a city, Camiling, in the Philippines also, that is an emeritus sister city. The action with them is kind of limited right now, so they're in emeritus status.
All right. Thank you all for coming on the show. Anyone else want to add anything?
We're excited. Please come out to the rink. Like Chris said, it's a free event. There will be concessions available, hot dogs, hamburgers, and that'll be put on by the Youth Hockey Association. So come on out.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into a Juno Afternoon. Let's take a look at the forecast here for tonight. It calls for decreasing clouds with scattered rain showers in the evening, then possibly scattered snow showers late with some patchy fog, and lows around 30, light winds from the east at 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow calls for partly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 41. No call for precipitation tomorrow. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain, highs around 41 degrees. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, we'll learn about a film in the Great Museums of the World series. George Kuhar will be here with a preview of his Alaska Originals concert on Friday. Lori Wilson from the Red Cross will share the details about their upcoming fundraiser. And Glacier Valley Elementary School teacher Diane Antea will be here to highlight Geography Bees.